This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the play on the show.
Oh, hello. Good morning on this fine Thursday, May 21st of 2020. I am Paul Gallant, and with Danny O'Neill on vacation, I am joined by a man who played wide receiver in the NFL, who played for our beloved Cougs, who coached at Monroe High School. It's Michael Pappas. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, Gallant? How are you doing this fine morning? Thanks for having me once again.
Oh, no problem whatsoever. I'm doing all right. I am doing all right. My cat is running all over the place, as usual, in the apartment, trying to show off and gather my attention because I'm not paying attention to it. When I do pay it attention, it doesn't want anything to do with me. That is just how life works. Speaking of attention, it seems, Michael Bumpus, and this is just a natural transition, that the Seahawks have focused their attention on a couple of free agency additions. Veterans, in fact. But I don't think it's a veteran that everyone wants them to bring aboard. I will say, though, I like hearing, Bump, that they've offered former Falcons Devontae Freeman, running back Devontae Freeman, a one-year deal. And apparently they have also discussed potentially bringing aboard Carlos Hyde at running back. They do need another running back, right?
Yeah, they need another running back, and no one knows what Penny's looking like. Well, you hear Pete Carroll say he's not sure if Penny's going to be ready to go. Chris Carson, he should be ready, but how healthy is he going to be? So you need an insurance policy, and you got a Freeman and a Carlos Hyde. And honestly, I kind of like Hyde better than Freeman. Freeman had, 600 rushing yards last year, 400 receiving yards, so over 1,000 yards total. But I think you need a guy who runs between the tackles, and Freeman's more of an outside zone, kind of scat back type guy. He's actually what I feel like Pete Carroll wanted CJ ProSize to be, but never really ended up being last year. So I kind of like Hyde, but I'm okay with Freeman if Carson Penny is 100% healthy, ready to go.
Okay. And you know what? I'm on the same page as you, Bump, because last year when I was in Houston before moving here in mid-September, the Texans traded for Carlos Hyde. Lamar Miller tore his ACL in a preseason game. And I thought to myself, man, it's something else that Carlos Hyde, a former second-round pick, has now been on as many teams as he's been. That was his fifth team already, and he's been in the NFL since 2014. Wow. And you think when someone jumps from one team to the next, okay, maybe there's something up. But last season, he was really good. He ran with power. He ran with authority, and I think you're right. I think that's the kind of running back that the Seahawks, in the interim, when they're trying to see if Chris Carson will be 100%, and when they likely won't have Rashad Penny for a while, that's the guy that they should be going after, not Devontae Freeman. That's just me.
Yeah, and you know, with DJ Dallas back there too, I feel like he can be that scat back. He can be the guy to get outside the tackles, to run the screens and whatnot. So we kind of got to see what happens with him, but the Hawks need a guy who can break tackles. That's what makes Chris Carson special, because every now and then your lineman's going to miss an assignment or a linebacker's just going to make a play. You need a guy to make somebody miss. As I watched the film on Freeman, he doesn't break too many tackles. Now, in open field, he'll make a guy miss, he'll shake somebody, but it's that first 2 or 3 yards, those hard yards, where I feel like Carlos Hyde is more fit for that, and that's what the Hawks like to do. Get a big body back there, a guy doesn't mind running through a man.
Yeah, have you played, how many video games have you played, Michael Pappas, over the course of your life? Do you have a favorite one in particular?
My favorite video game is probably FIFA. FIFA's my favorite.
Okay.
And then Madden,
okay.
Then 2K.
Okay, so Madden and 2K as well. Okay, so I was going to make a non-sports video game reference here, but FIFA, you can't exactly run over people, sadly. It would be great if you could. It would be a great addition to soccer, but so I've played this extremely nerdy game called Elder Scrolls. And in this game, you can pick what kind of warrior you want to be. You can be an archer, or you can be just an absolute brute, a barbarian. You get a hammer and you just smash people in the face. It's great. The way you're describing it, Freeman sounds closer to someone who maybe is an archer. I think the Seahawks want somebody, and they need somebody that can just beat everybody up in the face. That's what they were missing against the Packers. And you know, it's funny because we don't think of the running back as a big need, and I know that there's a lot of the insufferable militant 12s who refuse the idea that running backs are interchangeable. They believe the running backs are interchangeable. They don't believe that there's a difference between one or the other. But I would be willing to maybe pay a little bit more for Carlos Hyde, who I'm imagining would be asking for a lot of money. He signed a one-year, $2.8 million deal with Kansas City last year, and then he ran for 1,000 yards for the Texans last season. You're going to have to pay a little bit to get him. But, Bump, I still believe that if the Seahawks have any competent running back for that game against the Packers, they win. And remember their strategy early on in that game, they wanted to establish the run. It didn't work. Marshawn Lynch wasn't able to get it going. But then we saw in the NFC Championship game, like, that was the correct strategy. The 49ers passed the ball, what, like 15 times or less in that game against the Packers in the NFC Championship game? You got to beat up teams, because now everyone's like starting to drift into this like fleet and flight defenders mode. I really like the idea of Carlos Hyde, who the Seahawks have apparently talked to, but it sounds like things are maybe a little further along with Devontae Freeman, who they offered, I guess, a one-year deal with a base of $3 million. That could be up to $4 million, but he wants $5 million.
Yeah, I'm with you, Paul. You need a back that's going to bruise, you know, that's going to get those tough yards. But if they do get a Freeman, he does bring something to the table, right? He's good out the backfield. He's good in space. So that changes the game a bit. If you look at the Seahawks, they usually have a guy like that on their roster just in case. That's why CJ ProSize has been around for a while. I think that's what they were thinking with a Travis Homer, who's going to have to compete with a D.J. Dallas this year. And the years they were successful, they had three or four running backs in the stable ready to go. Unfortunately, last year, they got down to the fourth running back, and he just wasn't ready to carry a full load of going in between when it tackles him and catching screens or whatnot. So the more the merrier in that backfield, but you need your thoroughbred, and that's a Chris Carson. At this point, I don't think Freeman could be a thoroughbred. I think maybe Carlos Hyde could be serviceable for the majority of the year, but when the Hawks are successful, they got a bunch of running backs back there to give guys blows when they get tired, and it's to mix up the game plan. The more you can do, the better. Get some more running backs back there. Make these guys compete. But again, I'm really excited about DJ Dallas. I think if given an opportunity, he might turn some heads.
Yeah, and I'd love to see DJ Dallas out there, and extremely versatile in college. I mean, started off as a wide receiver, played a bunch of positions. I think in high school, I think he played quarterback for a little bit. Like, he's been all over the place. Good kick returner as well. I really want to see DJ Dallas out there myself, but I also realize with the offseason, it might be difficult for a guy like him to get on the field right away. And, you know, somebody who got traded last year in August and picked up the Texans offense pretty quickly, I feel like that guy is exactly the kind of player that maybe the Seahawks need. Now, here's the wrench, Bump. I think we all would all like right. to see the Seahawks add everyone, like, veteran-wise, if they could. But there's a whole salary cap deal, and I think a lot of people right now are still wondering, okay, well, if the Seahawks are going to sign a running back when they already have all these running backs on their roster, currently four, if I'm not mistaken, with Homer, with DJ Dallas, with also Chris Carson and Rashad Penny. So they're going to spend $5 million on another one. That's going to hurt their ability to bring back Jadeveon Clowney. That's going to hurt their ability to bring back Everson Griffin. Is this the point where it's time for the Seahawks to move on, or should they continue to try to just weather the storm and see if one of these running backs goes down in his asking price and if Clowney goes down in his asking price?
I think you weather the storm, man. As long as Clowney is available, you make yourself available. I don't think you just turn your back on a Clowney. I think you start inching away from him. I think you start texting less. I think you start calling less. But you always let them know that you're interested. You know, you slide in the DMs every now and then just to make sure he knows that he's loved and he's wanted. But you're not afraid to make a move. Now, when it comes to paying a running back, I think what Freeman wants, like $5 million. I looked last year, who got paid $5 million? Mark Ingram got paid $5 million, but he also rushed for 1,000 yards and did a lot of stuff in pass pro and stuff. So is he worth $5 million? I don't know. But you can't blame the man for wanting $5 million. He's what, 28 years old, 27 years old. He's in the prime of his career. I feel like he has gas left in the tank. So it's time for him to capitalize. So now it comes down to, all right, do you want to win ball games or not? Do you want to be a part of something special or not? And, you know, running back, it's a tough position, man. Your self life is only so long. At some point, your play starts to go down, so it's time for him to capitalize. But no, Paul, I would not give up on Clowney. I wouldn't be as aggressive as you were maybe in a March. But again, you let him know you're there. You let him know you're thinking about him, and there's still a spot for him on this roster.
What is it? If you love something, let it go?
Heck no. I don't believe that.
I don't either.
Keep it.
I don't either. Now, it's never worked out for me. Like, every single time that I should have let something go, I've been like, hey, hi, hey, hello, sent like six texts after the fact because I just don't get the message. And I just keep on fighting uphill because I believe that every single relationship I have in my life is some sort of romantic movie. I don't know. I should probably change my strategy. But I think the way that the Seahawks have handled things thus far, somewhat smart. But I just feel like, come on, get this Clowney thing done. And even if it comes at the expense of one of these running backs, I would get it. Because right now, I just don't know how the pass rush is going to improve. They've got a lot of faith in guys like Bruce Irvin and these young players. I don't know if that faith is warranted. He is Michael Bumpus. I am Paul Gallant. It is Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. It is now time for What to Watch For.
What to Watch For, every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
So the Seahawks officially have a backup quarterback, which means that, I guess, well, our beloved Gordon of our beloved Cougs is not going to be the Seahawks' backup quarterback. Geno Smith is back in the mix. Michael Bumpus. Could they do better, though, at backup quarterback than Geno Smith?
Talent-wise, probably, you know, like there is still a guy named Cam Newton out there, but as far as a guy understanding the organization and the offense, that's the easy pick. That's the way to go. He is a veteran. He hasn't shined as a veteran, but he has led teams to some victories, and I think that's what you want. You just want someone who's reliable, someone you know you can trust. He hasn't gotten in any type of trouble. He doesn't seem like he's grumpy on the sideline. He's fine, just holding the clipboard, and at some point, that's what you need. You bring in Cam Newton, I think that he would understand he's a backup quarterback, but he'd be itching to get in. And you know, I don't know Cam personally. I don't know what he's like. But I would like to think a guy who was a former MVP and went to a Super Bowl is going to want to get on the field eventually. So I think Geno is a safe pick. It hurts me to see that Anthony Gordon probably won't get a fair shot at this deal, but maybe he'll get a shot somewhere else.
I hope so. I have one last thought. And I think Geno Smith has definitely grown over the years and from his time in New York and maybe from his time at West Virginia. But I do find it amusing, Bump, that there is such a large percentage, because any percentage that believes that not signing Cam Newton to a one-year deal for $1 million as your backup quarterback, like, it's $1 million. And there have been such resistance to the idea of bringing in Cam Newton. Geno Smith is a guy who, when I watched him playing for West Virginia against Syracuse, I remember he was pouting on the sideline just as much as Cam Newton supposedly pouts. And this is also the same guy who got punched in the face by his teammate in New York for supposedly not paying up on a $600 bet. But so I'm really curious, for those listening right now, you can text in 710-710 of the Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line. Like, would you really want Geno Smith over Cam Newton? All you people that don't want Cam Newton on your team.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, Paul, because last year DK Metcalf actually posted a picture on his Instagram and somebody questioned why he had a Geno Smith signed jersey. He had Geno Smith's signature and he said he talked about what an impression he had on him as a young player. And you talk about growth and the Seahawks being so confident in Russell Wilson's health that Geno might actually be an extremely positive influence in that locker room, and maybe that's all they really need. Well, you look at Cam Newton, and you really don't see him getting the same kind of accolades.
That's a great point, Jess. That is a great point. And look, we'll see how it goes. Clearly, he has left an impression in that locker room, and he's very good at coin tosses.
What to watch for?
Alden Smith. Remember him? He hasn't played in the NFL since 2015. He's now a member of the Dallas Cowboys. He has been reinstated by the NFL. I believe this is chance 9 for him, Michael Bumpus. Am I the only person that can't hear Michael Bumpus right now?
No.
Bueller.
We can't hear him. We'll get him back.
Okay, cool. All right, I saw it.
This is the beauty and the miracle of radio from home.
Classic radio from home. All right, well, we'll try to get Bumpus back on because I know he has some thoughts on Alden Smith. I'm curious to know whether or not this guy deserves another chance. So we'll get Bumpus' thoughts on that a little bit later. One last thing in What to Watch For.
What to Watch For.
Very cool news. Former Mariner Nelson Cruz is a finalist for the prestigious Muhammad Ali Award for Humanitarian Service. He's currently with the Minnesota Twins. Last week, he was with my guy, Pedro Martinez, in the Dominican Republic. I'll just say this, and I'm sure that anyone listening right now probably feels the same way. Anyone who is able to give back right now makes me feel so guilty. It really does.
Oh, Paul, come on. Just be happy.
Listen, I'm happy for him. It's great. But at the same time, I'm like, what should I be doing? Probably I could do things that are more productive to help out people that are in a rough situation than playing Call of Duty Warzone for like 5 hours every single day.
Maybe probably just like swear at people that. A little less while you're playing video games. You know, it's the little things.
You know what? I'm good. I am behaved on that. It's more I swear at myself when I die. It's no bueno when that goes down. All right.
Well, one thing about Nelson Cruz. Oh, man. One small thing. When he came here, I think it was 2 summers ago. It was before you got here to Seattle, Paul. He came back with the Twins. And he is unbelievably beloved. I think that we had him on our show on Afternoon Drive. And it was mentioned to us how someone who spent such a small amount of time in Seattle is such a hometown hero. And I went to get him and try to find him to get him on the show beforehand. We were taping the interview, and he was getting a tour from John Stanton, the owner of the team. You know, like, it was just, he knew exactly where to go. He wanted to say hi to everybody. Everybody loves him. Oh, he knows everybody's name. He's just, I think we look at him as such a superstar. It is absolutely no surprise to see him getting this award.
Very, very cool. Anyone who, again, who's giving back right now, my hat is off to you. And hopefully everyone's staying safe out there, those who are helping and giving back in whatever way they can. All right, it is time for John Clayton's Morning Drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be 3 spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by DivorceLawyersForMen.com.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, we've heard that the Seahawks made an offer to Devontae Freeman to potentially bring him in, a veteran running back, to add a little depth to the position. They've also supposedly had conversations with Carlos Hyde. What's the latest that you're hearing about the Seahawks potentially adding a veteran running back?
Yeah, well, Mike Silver kind of put out the number that I thought would be where Freeman would come in at this stage. Now, again, you're thinking if he was going to be early in free agency, he's going to be trying to get $6 to $8 million a year on a multi-year deal, maybe like a 2-year deal like Melvin Gordon. But Silver put out from the NFL Network that it's 1 year, $3 million on the offer. And I think that's fair. You can see that out of Philadelphia, Adam Kaplan reported that the Eagles are definitely interested, but they're not willing to go above the minimum salary, you know, 1.187. And so I think you can see Seattle does have a decent chance to get him if he's willing to take the offer, and it gives him a running back that, you know, really, for whatever reason, Dirk Cutter came into Tampa and Freeman didn't fit the type of runner that he wants. And we see this occasionally, like, for example, Melvin Gordon felt that, you know, they didn't run enough of the inside zone runs that worked so well for him. They changed it up, and so he didn't fit in as well. So now he goes to Denver. So, you know, 1 year, $3 million. That may be something that can work.
Hey, John, the Seahawks officially signed Geno Smith out there. Was there anyone else? Was there a better option out there? I understand why they did it, but maybe for the fans, they thought maybe a Cam Newton should have been signed. Was there someone else out there you think the Hawks should have went after?
Not really. I think that was the best fit, because the thing that people forget about, it's like there's two things on Cam Newton, and this is not personality. This is not, you know, putting him in a locker room on a Russell Wilson team. It's like he's not going to sign for minimum salary. Simple as that. I mean, it's like, you know, he believes he's a starting quarterback, and the only reason right now that he can't do anything, and this is the second part of it, is that he can't take a physical. And he's coming off shoulder problems from a couple years ago. He's got the issue right now with the Liz Frank injury. And so you notice, I mean, he's out of luck right now. But, you know, people, you know, because I'm sure Gino pretty much got the minimum salary. And if that's the case, I mean, I think it's a good fit. I mean, you still got to save cap room for other things that you want to do. You still have to save the cap room for everything else, and you don't want to start releasing players to get guys in there. I mean, Cam Newton was not going to sign like a Jameis Winston contract for $1.1 million. So it's like people thinking that, yeah, is Cam Newton better than Geno Smith? Yeah, but you can't afford him.
We've been asking you about Jadeveon Clowney all offseason, John. And earlier this week, we heard from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, the Titans, one of the other teams supposedly in on Jadeveon Clowney, that, quote, nothing is off the table, but nothing is on the table. So very vague, nothing answer. Who do you think and what is it going to take for a team? Who is the first team and what is it going to take for that first team to finally decide, you know what, enough is enough. We're going to bring in Jadeveon Clowney.
I don't see anything happening for a couple months. I mean, until first off, the doctors have to be able to give team physicals, and so nothing's going to happen before then. And then, he's the one reason why nothing's on the table is because he doesn't make counteroffers. I mean, Seattle made offers, up to $16 million, and he never countered. And I'm sure it's the same thing. But I'd say right now, he may not believe this, but his value is probably down to 10 mil. And, remember, this is a guy that wanted over 22 to 23. He still is one of the best edge rushers in football, but he's played all his cards wrong. And because of that, I mean, everybody's gone different directions. Say what you want. Tennessee did sign Vic Beasley, paid him 1 year, $9.5 million. They brought back Camilla Correa and they paid him 1 year, $2.25. They'd love to have Clowney. Everybody would love to have Clowney, but so far, what he's asking for and what he's trying to do is like he can ask, but he doesn't even come back with counteroffers.
John, Tom Brady says he's going to learn a new offense, unlike Peyton Manning, who kind of said, look, this is what you guys are going to do. Do you feel like that's a good move at this point in his career?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, because again, I think that, he's in good hands. He's got Bruce Arians there. He's got Byron Leftwich there. And, the one thing that, if you go to a different team, you have to make an adjustment because, I mean, you think about some of the stuff that he had back in New England, it was a lot of college stuff that was put in years ago. They put in the Oregon running attack. They put in the spread offense that, from Mike Leach, the air raid. They did all those different things. And so he has this big, extensive playbook. And I'm sure now that it's probably a lot thinner just from the standpoint that, he's got a little bit more simplicity and he's going to try to have to maybe throw some longer baskets because, that's Bruce Arians. No, don't risk it, no biscuit. And so that's, I think, going to be something that he needs to do.
We saw yesterday Ben Roethlisberger was throwing passes to his teammates. Ryan Switzer, one of his wide receivers, thought that he looked pretty good. I think there's a little Instagram montage video put out there. Got to say, did joke yesterday about, suspending Ben Roethlisberger for getting his haircut, but it is funny that people seem to be more worked up about the haircut than they are about throwing passes to teammates. It sort of just shows how inconsistent we are with everything during these COVID-19 days. But that's neither here nor there, John. My question for you, do you think Ben Roethlisberger is going to be an unalternate-aided Pro Bowl quarterback this coming season?
I would think so, because what you're looking at, I mean, I think he's fine coming off the injury. The video does show that the arm strength is there, and you look at what he has to face. I mean, he's facing like 11 quarterbacks this year with 3 or less years experience. And of course, when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback with his credentials and you have enough weapons, they probably could still use a little bit more receiver help. I think that you're going to see him put up good numbers and put up good wins because, like in the same way with Phillip Rivers going to Indianapolis, that puts them at that playoff level. And I think that, Ben, I think he's going to put up both good numbers and good wins.
John, I'm going back to Tampa. Gronk says he's close to his own playing weight. What should we expect out of him? Are we expecting Pro Bowl Gronkowski, or are we just expecting a guy that's going to fill in and get it done?
No, I don't know if you're going to see Pro Bowl Gronkowski, but I think what you'll see is a good Gronkowski. The one thing that's so weird is that they've got 3 tight ends on the team, and so you figure they're probably going to use a little bit more 2 tight end on it because they still have Cameron Brate, and they also have Howard, who is right now on the just going to be. I don't know if they're going to trade him or not, but I'd say right now what you're probably looking at is 65 passes, maybe 8 to 10 touchdowns. I think he's going to be a big factor because the one thing that he knows what to do for Tom Brady, and I think that they'll get the most out of him.
Professor, we always appreciate you joining us every single morning right here on Danny Gallant at 7:15, and we'll catch you on the John Clayton Show at 10 o'clock this morning.
Sounds good.
Here's the professor, John Clayton. Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. Bump has played in the National Football League. He played for our beloved Cougs. He also did a little bit of coaching at Monroe High School. He's got some perspective on a controversial NFL proposal that you need to hear. You will hear that next right here, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I think sometimes you can do the wrong thing while trying to do the right thing, if that makes sense at all. So I think that there are a lot of qualified African-American coaches right now that could be a head coach in this league. And I just pray that we do our due diligence and give these guys an opportunity. Why are they not getting an opportunity? We can talk about that all day. But, I mean, trust me when I tell you, but there are some qualified applicants that they, and they need an opportunity. And I just think this is out of desperation. This is something that's, you know, that we're throwing out there. But, you know, it is what it is.
That was the voice of Los Angeles Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn weighing in on the NFL's proposal that would have given draft-based incentives for teams that hired minority candidates as head coaches or general managers. For those who don't know, per Jim Trotter, teams could have moved up as many as 16 spots in the third round based on selecting minority candidates. A head coach gets you 6, a general manager gets you 10. I saw that proposal at first, Bump, and I thought to myself, this is, it just looks strange. I thought it was a fake account that was posting it when I first saw it, because it looked a little tone deaf, at least at first glance.
Yeah, it's gimmicky, you know what I mean? But like Anthony said, it's like they're trying to do the right thing, but they don't know how to go about it. It's like, yes, this league is 65 to 75% black, so there needs to be more minority representation when it comes to coaching and general managers and stuff. And, you know, as a minority, you want equal opportunity, but you don't want it to feel like a handout. You don't want it to be like, here, do this, and we'll reward you. You want to get hired just off of your reputation, off of your qualifications, off of your work ethic. So it puts minorities in a weird position, because if this rule were to go through, there's not going to be a minority that's going to be like, no, I don't want this opportunity, because they're only doing this because they're going to benefit from it in the long run. You're going to take the opportunity, but you don't want it to be a handout. And there are a bunch of qualified coaches out there, but the key is getting minority coaches in the rotation. Because once you get in that coaching rotation, there's a big chance that you're going to get recycled like the rest of these guys. You look at every staff in the NFL, there's always a guy who was a head coach, who was a coordinator, who was a position coach. Like, they just get recycled. So give the minorities a chance to get recycled. But it's like, you don't want a handout. So it's a tricky situation. They're trying to do the right thing, but it's kind of like a slap in the face and at the same time. And just hire a guy because you like him, because he's the right guy for the job, not because you're going to benefit somehow in the draft.
I'm with you there. And look, Danny and I weighed in on this over the last week or so, and we, let's be honest, we're honkies. The Vizzy's Hard Seltzer text line has pointed that out. I mean, us talking about feelings that we would feel or that we think others would feel if they were potentially given that job, we don't have the best perspective on it. But okay, you've been a coach before. Say all of a sudden you did get that promotion. I mean, what would you do if you were given that offer and you suspected that there might be more at play there?
I'd take the offer and I take advantage of it. You know, people take advantage of rules all the time, taxes, whatever. That's human nature, to take advantage of every opportunity that you have. So as a coach, I would take that opportunity and take advantage of it. You know, I would understand what it is. You know, I would maybe look at my employer a little different. Like, do you really like me? Do you really feel like I'm good for this job? Or are you just doing this because you're going to benefit? Now, the flip side is, once these minorities get these opportunities, you cannot raise expectations. They have to be the same as any other coach who gets this opportunity, right? They can't be, oh, you got this because of this, so you better succeed. Most coaches fail in this league. Most players fail in this league. So people have to understand that these guys are going to get opportunities, but you can't expect them just to be world beaters and everybody be a success. Everyone's going to be a Mike Tomlin. No, that's not how this works. You know, just give them a chance, let them get in rotation. And maybe once there is more representation owners will be more likely to take those chances. But this is, it's a frat, man. It's an old man's club. You got these old owners. Family's been owning teams for decades. And, you know, it is what it is at this point. Just give guys a chance.
Some of the retreads who have been, like, passed along in this league. Like, remember, how did Pat Shurmur get back in the league as a head coach? That's the thing that bothers me the most. I don't care if you're white or you're black or you're Hispanic or you're Asian. Like, I don't care what you are. I would like to see someone out there who is fresh and can do something different, because that, you're so right about the retread thing. There are guys that continuously get jobs and you're like, how? I mean, Hugh Jackson keeping his job as long as he did. I never understood the Hugh Jackson fascination. I thought that he did okay in Oakland. He had that one season, I think, where they went 8-8. But after that, like, it wasn't so good. And then he gets another job. They keep him around for a while. I'm with you in that it shouldn't be based off of that. And I think also when you're looking at potentially, like, 6 picks or 10 picks, it's an incentive, but it's also not the kind of incentive that I think that's going to elevate expectations for those coaches, at least to me. But I'm not an owner, and I'm not a general manager. And you're right, there might be a double standard there.
Yeah, and let's put it out there, too, that it's not only minority coaches. There are some good young coaches who aren't minorities who are getting overlooked because they don't have relationships with these guys, because they haven't gone out to the country club and played a round of golf with them, or, you know, had a beer with them, or just don't have access to these guys. Now, business is based on a lot of it is based on relationships, which I get it. You have to like the person. You have to be able to work with the person. I get it. But that doesn't mean you overlook a guy who was an intern, who was a quality control. Now he's a position coach. You know, the guy who's grinding and grinding. I heard Stephen A. Smith point out Kingsbury, which I have nothing against Kingsbury, but was he qualified to be a head coach on paper for the Arizona Cardinals? Probably not. He probably knew the right guy, had the right cup of coffee, went to the right golf course, had some type of relationship with him, and wooed the guy, and boom, now he gets an opportunity because of his relationship. On paper, I there's a bunch of other guys who are more qualified for that position. Nothing against Kingsbury.
I mean, let's stop the presses right now.
Money.
The ladies are going to be all over the place drooling over Cliff Kingsbury.
Well, Stephen A., you're not wrong there. And here's the other thing, too. I mean, imagine if Cliff Kingsbury brought one of those NFL owners over to his house. I mean, he might have a better house than at least one NFL owner. Seriously. I mean, that house is amazing. And you're right. Like, it is about relationships, unfortunately. And I don't know how owners get better in touch with this, but I imagine, Bump, as an ex-player, like, you know, there are certain positional coaches that are great, and there are other positional coaches that are crap. My old co-host in Houston used to say, like, there was this one guy, I think his name was Richard Smith, who he just could not stand when the guy was the defensive coordinator for him. But there are other guys, and Anthony Weaver, who finally got elevated to defensive coordinator in Houston, that guy's been highly thought of for a really long time there. And I'm sure you've had some positional coaches like that, and you're like, why isn't this guy getting elevated up the ranks? This guy's really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's relationships, man. Give other people chances to be garbage, okay? There's a bunch of garbage people out there who just keep getting recycled. Let somebody else have a chance. And you know what? Change could be good. Change could be bad. But you never know unless you give it a try. You just never know. And it all starts with ownership. And that's the thing, man. It starts from the top. And you got older white dudes who are running this show, and they're going to go with what they're comfortable with. Like, you need someone under them who's not a yes man to be like, look, let's take a shot on this guy. Let's change our approach a little bit and just see what happens. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But at least you tried something different.
He is Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. In a sport as macho as football, we do tend to overlook the whole feelings side of things. There are a couple of players across the league, and there's one that is in this Seahawks locker room. I'm very curious as to what their feelings are after some of the moves that were made in this past draft. Michael Bumpus is going to weigh in on that with me next. Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bumpus is in for Danny O'Neill, who was on a much-deserved vacation. We don't really care that much about feelings when it comes to sports. Maybe we should. Maybe we should be a little more empathetic, but we all know that we get very irrational about them. I mean, Bump, I was talking yesterday with Lawyer Malloy when we had him aboard about crying after I found out that the Patriots had released him and then throwing a temper tantrum 6 days later when his Bills shut out the Patriots 31-0 after he signed with them. It's a sport that tends to get us emotional while we watch it. But if you're a player and all of a sudden someone gets brought aboard and he plays the same position as you, that's got to be a very difficult process to go through.
Yeah, I think it depends on who you are and what you mean to the organization, right? Like, if I am a starter, say I'm a Bobby Wagner, I've been a starter here for years, and you bring in a kid, you draft him in the first round, say Jordan Brooks, and you realize like this guy is going to replace you eventually, but you're playing well, you know you're loved, you're liked, so it's different for him. But for other guys who are like in their 13th, 14th year on their way out, and they see this young guy come in, the writing's on the wall, and it's all about how you handle that mentally. For some guys, it can mess them up. For some guys, it can motivate them. But I think people forget that these people are human, and in athletics, you see your replacement. You'll see him every single day, and then you're asked to teach this guy. So there's a mental battle that goes on for athletes when you see your replacement getting drafted and in the same room as you.
Yeah, I think I'd be pissed if someone got drafted at my position. And especially in the latter situation that you outlined, Bump. I mean, if I'm a guy that's been scrapping it in the league for a couple of seasons, but I found a way to be a starter, and then all of a sudden someone's brought in, especially if he's an early round draft pick, that guy all of a sudden could take my livelihood away. I could be out of the league. I might not get the same job somewhere else. I might not get the same kind of money somewhere else. And we know with these non-guaranteed contracts, a team can unplug you very, very easily. And you mentioned the being a professional part. That's the worst part of all, because you want to continue to be a professional. And to continue to be a professional, you probably want to be selfish and keep to yourself. You don't really want to give this guy any tips or hints as to how to make it in the league. But if you want your team to win, there's an obligation to help this kid learn things.
Yeah, it's a weird game you have to play, you know, and I feel like every situation is different, right? It depends on your age. It depends on your position. Say like an Aaron Rodgers with Jordan Love coming in. Now, Aaron Rodgers, he's going to try to say all the right things. You can kind of read between the lines on Aaron Rodgers. You know that he's kind of frustrated, a little bit annoyed, but he's going to come out. He's going to say the right things. Oh, we're glad to have him. I'm going to teach him and take him under my wing or whatnot. Or you can go the Brett Favre route and not say anything to the guy and, you know, try to actually make him uncomfortable and see how he responds to that. So it all depends on where you are, what position. At the quarterback position, they can draft a guy, and you know I still have like 3 or 4 more years left in my career. I might be okay. But at, say, like a receiver or a linebacker or a skill position to where, you know, it's really year by year unless you're a pro bowler. You know, I'm sure when I came in as an undrafted free agent, they weren't worried about me, right? Undrafted free agent, you're good to go. Now, say the Seahawks were to draft a receiver in the first round. I mean, a DK is like, what's going on? Lockett, he's probably pretty secure, but everyone else underneath Lockett is kind of like, what's going on? What's the situation? So it's case by case, position by position, but your best bet is to go on as business as usual, show up every day, get the job done, and just outperform the guy, because it all comes down to performance. If you play better than the guy, if you practice better than that youngster, that young man, then you're going to be on the field. And, you know, what do you want your team to do? You want to win Super Bowls or not? But it's a tricky situation, and I think people forget that these athletes are human, and they have feelings.
Yeah.
They feel things, you know, and they battle with that kind of stuff.
It's Danny and Gallant. Michael Pompas is sitting in for Danny O'Neill. Let's focus on Bobby Wagner for a second. We all know he's a consummate professional and that he reached out to Jordan Brooks, the Seahawks' first-round pick, right after he was taken, which is a great move. But how do you think he is feeling about it? Because we're also taking a look at this team, a defense that did not have any pass rush this past season, and while they were able to get Daryl Taylor in the second round, in the first round you would think, okay, well, maybe they could have gotten another pass rusher. I mean, it's not just for Bobby Wagner about someone that's playing at his position that might take a spot someday. It's also about, I'm in my prime, I'm coming off of an all-pro season, and all of a sudden, I'm getting help at a position that we probably don't want more of on the field. Like, you can't put four linebackers on the field unless you all of a sudden switch to a 4-4 or you decide to shift to the 3-4, which I don't think the Seahawks are all of a sudden about to do.
Yeah, you can't. You know, and, you know, Bobby's a special case. You know, Bobby's been a Pro Bowler. He had a good season last year stat-wise. Like, Bobby's probably like, I'm good. He's probably looking to his left and his right like, hey, you guys better step it up, man. This youngster's out here. He's coming for reps. He's coming for your job. You know, and that's just the nature of the beast, especially with the Seahawks. They love competition. They love bringing guys in. But if I'm a Bobby Wagner, I'm confident. And only confident guys reach out to guys, right? If you weren't a confident guy, if you're like, oh, snaps, this guy's coming for my job, I'm probably not going to reach out to him initially. Now, when he's in the building, it's going to be all love. It's going to be cordial. I'm going to try to help you out. But I'm not going to overextend myself. So the fact that Bobby's like, look, I'm going to reach out to this guy right now, let you know that he feels secure about his position. And then I wonder if management had a conversation with Bobby. You know, like, look, this is the guy we're bringing in. We're trying to get him ready for maybe 2-3 years down the road. Who knows? I feel like Bobby would he would have those conversations with management. He's been there long enough. He's a captain. So I feel like he knew what was going on.
If you're a young player, how do you go about asking for advice in this spot too? Because that's got to be difficult, because you know that this player that has been there for a long time is probably looking at you with a leery eye. First off, is this guy going to take my spot? Second off, does this guy even have what it takes? Is he someone that actually is going to work hard, do all the right things, or is he going to come in with a giant ego and be insufferable, obnoxious, and not someone that I want to play with? If you're a rookie, how do you go about it? How do you ingratiate yourself to the older players?
As a rookie, you just kind of fill it out, man. You know, DK said in an article, last week, how you sit down last, right? You wait to see where everyone sits down, then you take your spot. That's the same approach you should take when it comes to asking for advice. You know, who's talking to you at the water cooler? You know what I mean? Who's inviting you places? Because during the summertime, guys spend a lot of time together, you know, on their off days. The veterans kind of take the rookies under their wings for the most part. And you got to fill it out case by case. For me, Bobby Engram took me under his wing and said, look, this is how it's done. Boom, boom, boom. He's also been in the league 13, 14 years. I was undrafted rookie. He knew that, you know, he was fine, you know. So it's case by case. Some guys just don't want anything to do with you. Fortunately for me, when I was there, Nate Burleson was cool. Bobby Wagner was cool. I mean, Kerry Colbert came in. He was cool. So it was all love. And then it depends on the position, right? Because at the receiver position, guys can rotate in. Guys can rotate in. Like an offensive line position, you don't want to rotate those guys. You want your five to stay on the field the whole time. So I think it depends on the position as well. If it's a rotational position, I think guys are more likely to welcome him in. But if it's a spot where, look, I'm going to hold this spot down all season, it might be a little different.
Competition's a good thing. There's a lot of competition on the Seahawks pass rush. And there isn't really that one veteran player that a Daryl Taylor or an Alton Robinson can go up to and say, hey, what is it that I need to do? I'm curious as to how that dynamic is going to work out, because you're talking about a position with another young player in Rasheem Green that's going into his third year, LJ Collier going into his second season, other young players as well. I don't know who you turn to in that spot if you're one of those new players that's coming into the league.
Man, that spot is interesting, right? Because you're still waiting on Clowney. Are they going to bring in Griffin? Are they going to bring in a veteran? At this point, it's like maybe Bruce Irvin, you know? You talk to that guy, and then if there's no veteran you can talk to, you got to lean on a coach now. Now the coaches are going to get paid to coach. You got to get these guys ready. Even if you are a second or third year guy, you still have more experience than that rookie, right? So maybe you can lean on them as well. If I'm a rookie at any position, I'm just ears. I'm all ears. I'm listening to every conversation. When this guy's getting coached up, I'm watching the film. I'm getting coached up too. I'm taking those coaching points and I'm applying them to myself. So you have to be really observant. If you're not comfortable asking questions and getting yourself out there like that, man, watch film and listen to every single conversation and you'll pick up some nuggets.
He is Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. Up next, we've got Blue 42 with Brock Huard. He played with Peyton Manning, and yesterday we had a conversation about how things could have been had Pete Carroll lured Peyton Manning to Seattle in 2012. Would he and Peyton have actually been compatible? Jeez, I can't speak English. Brock is going to answer that question for us next, right here, 710 ESPN Seattle.